Well, it's time for the annual Bob Enyart Live Internet Telethon. Help keep Bob Enyart Live on the internet for another year. Help keep Bob's message going out to a worldwide audience, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. If you like the teaching, if you like the resources, if you believe that this ministry is valuable and necessary in a lost and dying world, please go to the KGov store, sign up for the monthly Bible study, buy some products, arm yourself with some of the best Bible teaching available on the market today. Keep Bob Enyart's message going out to a worldwide audience on the internet for another year.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and there are two fabulous DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. These are by a dear friend of Real Science Radio, Spike Pisaris. And Spike has created simply the greatest astronomy DVDs ever produced. And we have gone through probably hundreds of science DVDs and books, and we recommend only the very best at our store, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and you'll love these astronomy DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. You got to get them.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Part two of our annual list of evidence that contradicts the Big Bang. Fred, do you remember what Lawrence Krauss said on the air? He wrote in his book that all evidence supports the Big Bang.
That it was overwhelming.
Oh, you're right. He said all evidence overwhelmingly supports the Big Bang. And then this is what he added on this show, Real Science Radio. He said, overwhelming is an understatement.
It's an understatement.
That is so funny.
So we've already done one show, part one, of powerful evidence against the Big
Bang. Like the greatest observations in the history of science, taking in the most data, trillions, quadrillions of stars, tens of thousands of galaxies, laying out data that seems to contradict the Big Bang in so many ways.
And we didn't even get through that evidence. I mean, there's lots more. We're going to cover more of it today. And if you missed last week's show, you can go to realscienceradio.com, download it there and listen to it, stream it or download it.
And make sure to share it with a friend. Friends who like science, like creation, evolution, that's how Real Science Radio grows. And this is our telethon month, and we'd love to encourage you to check out Spike Pisaris' DVDs on astronomy. They're the best ever produced.
That's right. And you can go to realscienceradio.com, to the store, and order this stuff, right?
That's right. You'll love the Spike Pisaris' DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Disc 1 and 2, Volumes 1 and 2.
That's right. Another thing they can learn is we're going to answer a really big question today. What came first, stars or galaxies?
Okay, so we're thinking about the evidence for the Big Bang. What came first? You know what, Fred? We'll put this on our show summary. The longtime editor of the journal Nature. Now, that's the mother lode of Big Bang dogma.
Isn't that John Madden, a former Oakland Raiders coach?
That's John Maddox.
Oh, John Maddox.
Different
okay.
John. He wrote a book called What Remains to be Discovered. In there, he admits that cosmologists don't even know which objects came first, stars or galaxies. That's a quote. That's very specific. This is why that's important, because the public is told by people like Lawrence Krauss and Stephen Hawking that they really have it all figured out. You don't need to worry. Just trust them. They know the Big Bang is true. They're asking for a tremendous high level of confidence to be put in their conclusion. So if they really figured all that out, you'd think that they would know which came first, stars or galaxies.
Well, I wonder if they know which came first between the chicken and the egg.
Yeah. Well, it must have been the proto chicken, beta 0.7.
It wasn't the alpha chicken?
Well, it may have been. In fact, Fred, that reminds me of that Bible story where at Judgment Day, God says to all the evolutionists like Dobzhansky and Dawkins and Darwin and all of them, he says, look, I'll give you a few weeks to get together and make your best defense of evolution. And then if you do a good job, you know, I'll give you a second chance. You remember this story?
I've heard it before. I think I've heard you tell it.
So they get together and they come out and they're at Judgment Day. And God says, all right, for starters, what came first, the chicken or the egg? And they're like
don't.
Wait, that's no fair. We're not prepared. And that's it.
Boom, gone. They're gone.
It's like, oops, didn't know. Fred, when they don't know which came first, stars or galaxies, that should tell the average person in the public that they are exaggerating what they claim to know about how the universe formed, how the galaxies formed. Galaxies are made of stars. If you don't know whether there were stars or galaxies first, there's a lot you don't know.
So if you're going to be storytelling on such an important thing as this, what else are you storytelling on?
Good question. What's our second bit of evidence that they've oversold the Big Bang?
The spiral arms that galaxies have. In fact, I saw you debate this. I think the first time I met you, Bob, you were debating an old Earth group here in Colorado, right?
Yeah,
that's
right.
The Reasons to Believe, I think.
Yeah, the Hugh Ross group, a geophysicist and a mathematician from up in CU in Boulder.
I remember you presented this one, and they had no answer for it. If I remember correctly, they just went to the next question. So it says a lot, the fact that you sell that debate and they don't. Mm-hmm. But anyways, it's this concept of spiral galaxies. If the universe is billions of years old, these arms on these galaxies should, over time, because of Newton's laws, they should wind up like a clock screw. They should become deformed. So it should be a featureless disk over time. It's like winding up a clock screw. It should just be a blob, right? A blob of stars.
Yeah, we shouldn't have these beautiful spiral galaxies like we do. Forget about billions of years. After only millions of years, they should be deformed, the arms. And what do we find? We find so many beautiful spiral galaxies.
And it doesn't matter how far out you look with the Hubble telescope.
Yeah.
There are these beautiful arms, and it's as if they're just planted there.
That is evidence against the Big Bang. So they need a rescue device. They need a secondary assumption to say why these spiral galaxies are so beautiful. There are cosmologists and astronomers at a website called cosmologystatement.org. And we have mentioned some of them and talked about their credentials and the prestigious institutes they work for. And they say, look, evidence for the Big Bang is basically being fabricated. The Big Bang is a broken model. It doesn't work. And so they say they invent things like dark matter and dark energy, things that they cannot explain, they can't find. They can't identify, but they say, well, here's why our model works. And if you just get to make stuff up to explain why your scientific model works, well, then you could save the epicycles of the planets in geocentrism. You could save that, too, if you're going to just make stuff up.
Yeah. So, yeah, cosmologystatement.org. If you go there, you'll see a whole long, long list of secular scientists who doubt the Big Bang theory because it's so flimsy. And yet Krauss says that there's overwhelming evidence for it, and you can find all these guys that are, that are his peers that disagree.
Right. Fred, another example is the missing echo of the Big Bang. This is a more recent study, but some astronomers said, well, let's do this. Let's look at the echo of the Big Bang. Let's look for it sort of behind the nearest galaxies. So if there was a Big Bang and it makes sort of an echo, like the cosmic microwave background radiation, just this evidence, they say, of the Big Bang, then behind the closest galaxies to us, we should see an echo. We should be able to quantify and measure a difference when we tried to analyze the data. And so this was a big study, and it was published in the mainstream science journals and all. And they said, you know what? There's a missing echo. We could not find the echo of the Big Bang.
Something else missing.
Missing billions of years, missing metal, missing collisions. The Big Bang is missing.
Do we find the same amount of nickel on the Earth that we find like on the moon or the sun? Okay, Bob, another thing that's missing is the uniform distribution of isotopes like nickel. You know, nickel has different versions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, different radioactive
elements. Like depending on how many neutrons an atom might have, you have different versions, right, of an element.
And so do we have the same breakup of these, you know, versions of nickel on Earth and on the sun and on the moon?
Yeah, this is what's fascinating. And we'll link to these also. When they look at the different isotopes of elements on the Earth and the moon and the sun, and they make predictions. And they say, now, since we know how these all formed, gas nebula in space, swirling, gradually condensed, and you know what, Fred? what they predict is typically exactly not what they find. They say, well, we should find the same isotopes here and there. They find the same ones. And so it's constantly challenging their suppositions. And the challenges are on very fundamental issues. Like, for example, in our solar system, we have the eight planets, poor old Pluto. We have the eight planets and the sun. And so they come up with a theory of planet formation that fits our solar system. And they find these rocky planets close to the sun and the gas giants far away. So they say, well, here's what we figured out. When planets form around a star, the ones with the heavier minerals and all elements will form close in and the gas giants will form far out. And they say, in fact, the reason you can't have a gas giant close to the star is because the star's gravity would suck the gas in.
Suck all the gas in.
It would never be able to form. And so what happens? Oops.
Yeah, what are these exoplanets?
Yeah, we're finding hundreds of planets that are orbiting other stars in our galaxy. They're finding hot Jupiters. What do they mean by a hot Jupiter?
A hot Jupiter? It's a big gas giant planet. It's a gas planet that they again predicted wouldn't happen. So again, a failed prediction.
Right. Well,
they're failing at a lot of predictions on the Big Bang.
Yeah. And so the only reason they said that, well, you know, the gas giant can't form close in, it's after the fact. They're creating their theory to match the data. And they say, well, see, the planets formed exactly the way we said they would. That's not true. You created your theory after the fact, so you tweaked your theory to the data. So the creationist generally would expect, when they make specific predictions about how our solar system formed, when we find other planets, they're not going to fit those predictions because their whole model is false, and therefore it's not going to have credibility.
That's right. In fact, another thing that they did was they assumed that because all the planets in our solar system have nearly circular orbits.
Thank the Lord that the Earth has such a circular orbit.
What would happen if it didn't?
Well, we'd be freezing cold in the winter to where probably there'd be death all over the planet and boiling hot in the summer.
That's right.
If our perihelion and our epihelion, the furthest point in your orbit from the sun and the closest, the perihelion. And so if those were exaggerated, maybe humanity would be destroyed.
Yeah, we would actually have global warming and global cooling.
Yeah, so what are
all in one.
Right, yeah, exactly. So what do the Big Bang theorists say? They say, well, we figured this out.
Yeah.
When planets form around a star, they must form nearly circular orbits.
Yeah, because they looked at what they saw with our solar system.
Right.
Well, guess what happened? Well, these exoplanets, they're kind of eccentric.
They're eccentric, sort of like me.
Yeah.
They're eccentric and they have highly eccentric orbits. So once again, the things we find in the real world tend to contradict the most fundamental claims of the atheist, of the evolutionist, and of the Big Bang cosmologist. And I like how Spike Pisaris refers to astronomers as evolutionists, because that's so perfect. And they get so angry when he does that. And they say, there's no Charles Darwin, there's no survival of the fittest, there are no different frequencies of alleles in outer space. And he's like, no, you guys speak of the evolution of stars, evolution of planets, evolution of galaxies. You guys are evolutionists, and I'm going to call you an evolutionist. They're evolutionists. It's so fun where we see that the claims that they make as we explore the universe, fundamental predictions are falsified over and over again.
Another one I like is how our sun rotates 7 degrees off the ecliptic. What does that mean?
Whoa, is that something. So the ecliptic, let's try to get our minds around that. This is a radio audience, so we can't show them, right? If you spin a gyroscope and it spins and it sort of stays upright because the part that's spinning the fastest is the widest, like its equator, so to speak. When the solar system is looked at from off in a distance, you see that all the planets are sort of orbiting around the sun in a plane. It's all similar. And so
and there's a slight tilt to that plane.
A slight tilt to the plane. When you look at the sun is also spinning in the same direction that all the planets are moving, but there's something extraordinary. The sun's rotation is tilted 7 degrees
in relation to the other planets.
To all the planets.
So something happened here.
Oh, the average of all the planets sets the ecliptic, and here the sun is rotating 7 degrees off. Fred, how does this happen? Where's Descartes when you need him? Get over here. Step into my office. He thought it was a gas nebula cloud forming the spinning sun and the spinning planets. Everything going in the same direction. If that were true, then the sun, its axis of its own rotation, would be sort of perpendicular to the plane of the ecliptic. But it's not. It's 7 degrees off. So one of two things had to happen, or a combination. Either somehow something took the sun and tilted it.
Tilted it 7 degrees.
That seems...
And it's such a small object. That'd be so easy to do.
Imagine the inertia, the momentum of all the matter in the sun, and tilting the sun. You know, forget Hercules. Tilting the sun. So something has to tilt the sun, or take all of the planets and tilt them.
Probably easier to take all the planets. Less mass.
It would be easier.
These planets?
They're both inexplicable. Both ideas are inexplicable. So that's another example. And this is what Lawrence Krauss says. All evidence overwhelmingly supports the Big Bang.
And that's an understatement.
Yeah, that's what he says. So, yeah, he's including the ecliptic and the sun's rotation on its axis. And Fred, you and I are Christian creationist talk show hosts. He's a theoretical physicist. Emphasis on the theoretical. Shouldn't he have all this straight? But he's a Darwin marketing rep.
Absolutely.
He's selling a godless worldview.
He's committed to a philosophy, not science.
Yeah. So you got to be careful today when you deal with a salesman. They will lie to you.
Absolutely.
Salesmen, I think it's widespread. And Lawrence Krauss, Stephen Hawking, P.C. Myers, Richard Dawkins, they are Darwin marketing reps, and they lie to you.
DMRs.
DMRs. You cannot trust them. They cannot be trusted.
You can't. So, Bob, what about Uranus? Shouldn't it have an axis of rotation parallel to that of the sun?
Hey, are you reading? Yeah, I guess it should. So think about the Earth going around the sun, and you could picture us rotating on our axis as we go around the sun. So it's sort of like a circle making a circle around a circle, something like that.
Isn't that what Uranus does?
A little bit different.
A little bit different.
If you look at Uranus as it orbits the sun, it looks like it's rolling around the sun because its axis of rotation is almost totally on its side. And so that is very much a contradiction of what should be if Voltaire was right and if the planets all form from this condensing gas cloud. What you said earlier, the conservation of angular momentum, everything should be spinning in the same direction on the same plane unless there are catastrophes. And hey, those scientists who refuse to allow one catastrophe on Earth, the global flood, they believe in catastrophes everywhere out in space.
Yeah,
everywhere.
They need lots of them to try to solve their
on
problem.
On demand. Catastrophes on demand. They should open up a Catastrophes R Us franchise.
Franchise?
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll get anybody to buy a franchise. They'll get maybe some of their fellow evolutionists.
They're going to need it. They need help.
They actually do.
The only real help they need is from God and his word, because he is the creator. That's why all their predictions, not all, but the vast majority, are falsified, because their story is not true. So facts are stubborn things.
They are. Now, Bob, I love how you always explain the theories of star formation that the evolutionists present. What's wrong with those theories?
That's another bit of evidence against the Big Bang, because they can't get a single star to form. Not even our sun. They have a hard time with the moon, let alone the sun. And all the stars. Fred, here's what they say, that there are gas molecules. You know, there's hydrogen, helium, lithium out in space, and gradually they're attracted to each other, and that forms a star. Well, the standard model of star formation begins past this critical point where the star already has, it's like a protostar. The star has enough gravity to continue to condense more and more matter. The beginning of that process is extremely difficult because gas in space doesn't tend to condense.
Yeah.
Because if gas began to come together, it increases the temperature and the pressure, and those things cause the gas to
push apart, right? To dissipate, disperse.
And so gravity, is that a weak force or a strong force? Gravity is a weak force. And so it turns out that temperature and pressure, these things easily overwhelm gravity. And so it's extremely difficult for physicists to tell the story and to show by computer animation, which should be easy to do. It's hard for them to show how a star would form. And so this is what they do. They sort of do what Charles Darwin did with his Origin of Species. Darwin sort of cheated with the title because he didn't explain how species originated. He started with a species.
He started with them. Yeah.
He started with it and then said they kept diversifying. That's a little bit overreaching in your title.
Well, it is. It's kind of like Steve Martin saying, if you're going to make $1 million, first you need $1 million.
Yeah, first start. Yeah, in the current economy, first start with $2 million.
Yeah.
And so in the typical models of how a star forms, they say, well, first a star explodes. You're like, wait a minute, somebody's cheating here. Can I get a buzzer? If you're going to tell us how a star forms, you can't start with a star exploding.
Yeah.
And they do that because they don't know how to compress the gas out in space, so it'll start forming a star. So they say, well, you got all this gas, and then a star explodes, and then it compresses this other gas, which forms now a second generation star.
Well, I think I just thought of something.
What?
I think galaxies came first.
Why?
Because. And then the stars are already there.
That's right. Then they don't have to solve the problem. Sort of like Charles Darwin.
Yeah.
Just start with it. No problem. Problem solved. There's another model where they say, okay, you start with a star and then the star explodes. And that's how stars are created. They're cheating. It's kind of like Stephen Hawking when they asked him, well, where did the universe come from? And he said, all the matter of the universe was borrowed from the gravitational field of the universe. Cheating.
Yeah.
Somebody's cheating. You can't use the word in the definition. If you're going to describe where the universe came from, you can't start with the universe.
And you know what's really sad is a lot of the public school students are looking at each other, man, he's really smart.
Wow.
He's smart.
Wow. Look at that guy go.
Yeah. How does he go with the explanation of planet formation? Ooh. So we already have a problem with star formation. Does he start with a planet?
It's another one that they should have solved long ago, Fred, with computer animation, because this is Newtonian physics, gravity. It should be easy. And so you get these planetesimals, you get these little meteoroids, and they're supposed to coalesce, except in space, when they actually come together and hit each other, they bounce off of each other. Or they sort of wrap around each other a little bit and go off on their merry ways. It's extremely difficult to form a planet. I mean, the moon has so many different theories of how the moon formed, and there's just the flavor of the day, the one that currently has the least severe problems.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, well, they got dark matter. Maybe right. They have, glue matter.
Oh yeah, they got gluons.
So Velcro matter. That's what it is.
Velcroons.
Yeah. So that's the thing that they've never observed, but I got Velcro. Yeah. Why don't they just come up with Velcro matter? That'll work. That'll get these
that
rocks to come together in space.
They stick together.
They'll stick together.
Hey,
and
NASA
form a planet.
Invented Velcro.
And then the prediction would
predicted.
Be, we should find Velcro between the rocks.
Jonathan Kahn, the harbinger, it was predicted.
Yeah.
Okay, so Fred, the last thing is the fine-tuning of the universe and the Earth, in fact, because this is not predicted by the Big Bang. All the examples of the electron to proton mass ratio.
Oh, yeah. If they're just an infinitesimal amount off, yet life doesn't exist.
Yeah. Things just fall apart. The gravitational force constant, the electron to proton ratio, the standard deviation of that, which is like 1 in 10 to the 37th, the electromagnetic force in the right ratio to the nuclear force. And it's not only those which scientists are admitting, even atheist scientists, that this is wildly unlikely and uncanny. But then, Fred, how about the fine-tuned parameters of the Earth? That's also not predicted by the Big Bang.
Yeah, that's right. What about the moon? Don't we have tides? If we didn't have it, the moon was too close.
A fabulous.
It's just at the right distance to keep our oceans healthy.
The Earth-Moon relationship, the nearly circular orbit, we have an eccentricity of like 0.02% for the Earth around the sun. The moon's nearly circular orbit, otherwise it'd be terrible, just 0.01% eccentricity.
There's a book called Rare Earth put out by two evolutionist PhD scientists,
and
they go through all
points.
Of these.
Yeah. The just right ozone layer, the Earth's spin rate, the atmospheric pressure, the phenomenally harmonious water cycle. If you study that, it blows your mind. It's not just like you learn in third grade. It
Absolutely.
Blows the mind of physicists. The liquid water that exists because the Earth is the right distance from the sun. Photosynthesis, Fred, they're saying, is depending on quantum physics in the most extraordinary way. That's in that PNAS, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Water doesn't break down because of quantum effects, as New Scientist has just concluded. And so it goes on and on. Fred, there are a lot of scientists rejecting the Big Bang, like famous astronomers like Fred Hoyle, Margaret and Jeffrey Burbidge, and all those guys at cosmologystatement.org.
Absolutely.
And then how about the hundreds of members of the Young Earth Creation Research Society?
That's right.
So when Krauss says all evidence overwhelmingly supports the Big Bang, he's fibbing.
Absolutely.
He cannot be trusted. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's been great. Two shows worth of evidence against the Big Bang.
Yeah. Can we do this next year? Lord willing, and if the Lord tarries.
That's right. And we'll have even more that we can present to you.
It'll be fun. RealScienceRadio.com. Please help us with our telethon, a donation, and then also the Spike Passaris DVDs on astronomy. You'll love them. God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, it's time for the annual Bob Enyart Live Internet Telethon. Help keep Bob Enyart Live on the internet for another year. Help keep Bob's message going out to a worldwide audience, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. If you like the teaching, if you like the resources, if you believe that this ministry is valuable and necessary in a lost and dying world, please go to the KGov store, sign up for the monthly Bible study, buy some products, arm yourself with some of the best Bible teaching available on the market today. Keep Bob Enyart's message going out to a worldwide audience on the internet for another year.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, all from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist?, Bob Enyart debates atheist Zaketh, a psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist? And then Mount St. Helens, the explosive evidence for catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realscienceradio.com.
Would you like to study the Bible, but don't really know where to start? Bob Enyart's seminar on hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, will help you to study and understand the Bible on a whole new level. Hermeneutics, Tools for Studying the Bible, is available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.